I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, September 28th, 2017. This is the post-impact PW Torch Livecast here at pwtorchlivecast.com. I am Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you tonight?
Mike, doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Not bad. We are connected through Skype again. If you listened last week, we had a little bit of an issue with that. So I'm hoping this connection holds up for the entire show. If it doesn't and I do get disconnected, we'll make sure we get back on the air as quickly as possible. But we're going to go with Skype for now and hope that it survives the whole show, I guess. We'll see. All right. Let's get right to it, though, Andrew. A lot to talk about on what was a Victory Road-themed episode of Impact. Let's start with the main event and what I thought was a good match with a confusing ending. Eli Drake defends his title with a whole bunch of interference and other stuff going on. In about 26 minutes, he beats Johnny Impact to retain the global championship. First and foremost, I mean, it seemed to me that they were clearly setting this up to continue and probably be the title match of Bound for Glory. Is that the same read you have as well?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'd been picturing for a while. So we always say, I had not read the spoilers, so I have no idea really where they're headed at this point. I mean, I guess probably some sort of rematch, but it's curious then that they would just give it away on TV. So I'm curious to see where they're going with this.
Yeah, you know, it seems like there's better ways to set up a match than having the match, you know, in order to set it right up. You know, there's other ways I think you can do it to sort of make that first meeting between Eli Drake and Johnny Impact happen at Bound for Glory. But I did think that this was a pretty good match. And although, you know, we've been critical of the announcing, deservedly so, I think, I thought that they, at least Josh Matthews, did a good job here of trying to explain that Eli Drake wanted the match to be slow and methodical. Johnny Impact wanted it to be a little faster and more, you know, high risk, at least with his offense. And I thought that that was a good way of explaining that, hey, Eli Drake is the heel and he wants the match to be boring. You know, in fact, I think Matthews even said that at one point that, hey, this, I think he had Impact in a real chinlock and he said, this might look boring to you, but this is what Eli Drake wants. So I actually thought that there was some good announcing in the main event. I thought the match itself told a pretty good story. I thought that the stuff that happened after the match, though, lost me a little bit. I mean, it was really hectic, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, having moments like that where it seems like everything's out of control, I think, leads to some excitement. But there was just a lot going on here. Conan shoved a fan and then shoved an Impact official who was at ringside. Drake and Adonis were beating on Johnny Impact, and for some reason Garza Jr. was out to defend Johnny Impact. But yeah, there just seemed to be a lot going on there. What did you think of all the shenanigans that were happening after the main event actually ended? Man.
I don't think I talked to myself very much, but when Garza Jr. ran out, I literally said, Garza Jr., what the hell? Like, to nobody.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, that was super random because, I mean, last we saw him, he was getting involved in a storyline with Braxton Sutter and Ali, and now they appear to have dropped that, and now he's not wearing those tearaway pants anymore.
Which is a good thing.
So it is a very good thing, yeah. So I don't know if he's suddenly in line for a big push. But yeah, I mean, I like that they tried to put heat back on LAX after they lost their titles. So I thought kind of that chaos was fun. But yeah, I mean, it's just another thing that we've complained about it before as well, or noted it, that it kind of just overshadows Eli Drake. And I thought tonight was a good job in portraying him as like a star. I thought he came across really well.
Yeah, me too.
Tonight for the most part. Yeah, I thought it was definitely his strongest night as champion so far. And then just kind of all that nonsense at the end kind of overshadow it. But I mean, it did give a lot of energy, so I kind of liked it in a way. But still, I would have preferred Drake just get that win, beat down a Johnny Impact, and just leave the end of the night with a lot of heat on him.
You know, I liked Eli Drake's promo. I'm not even sure if you'd call it a promo because it was only about 30 seconds. But the mic work that he did after the match, where he had where he had Adonis hold Johnny Impact, and he got right in front of his face with the title belt and said, "This is as close as you're going to get." You know, I thought just there seemed to be some emotion there, and you know, you're listening to him try to catch his breath because he just got done with a match. I thought that you know, like you said, made him look good. It made him come across like a star. Really, everything they did tonight went a long way in trying to make him come across as a star. Now, I agree with you that some of the stuff that happened after the match was a little overshadowed that a little bit. But I was happy that at least at the end of the night, the last thing we saw was Eli Drake standing over Johnny Impact. You know, that was, I think, the lasting impression that they were trying to give us was him standing over Impact and being the champion. And it still feels so weird to say to call Johnny Impact on a show that's named Impact. Am I alone in that? Does it sound weird?
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, because when he was when he first came into WWE, he was Johnny Nitro, and at that point, Nitro was dead. He didn't suddenly become Johnny Raw and Johnny SmackDown and then Johnny Lucha Underground. So, no, I'm with you on that one. I hate writing it in the Impact hit list every week if I bring him up, and I feel I have to know that I'm talking about the guy, not the show.
Yeah, it feels so weird to type, even in like my Impact report on PWTorch.com, you know, Impact lands a right hand, it feels so weird. I wish they would just do something. I mean, maybe, I don't know if he owns John Morrison or if WWE does, but go with something else.
You know? It's good at least he's not Johnny GFW, because then they'd have problems soon.
Yeah, that'd be weird. Yeah, speaking of Bound for Glory, because it does seem like that this is going to lead to Bound for Glory. I think, you know, that's what we're probably going to get for a main event title match. We were going to talk about it last week. I think we did briefly, but we had so many callers lined up last week. We still have callers lined up tonight at 515-605-9345. We'll get to callers in just a little bit. You can join the line at 515-605-9345, and you can also email the show at impactlivecast@gmail.com. But to talk a little more about Bound for Glory, because I know we discussed it a little bit last week but didn't really go in depth. They are taking Bound for Glory to Ottawa, Ontario, not far from Toronto, which is of course the home of Anthem Sports. They announced ticket prices this week. I saw this earlier in the week. I think they were doing $40 for the Bound for Glory for the pay-per-view. Tickets are $40 for ringside, which are the first four rows, and then they were going with a $20 general admission ticket. And then for the television tapings, they're going to take place in the same building in Ottawa after Bound for Glory. They're going with $30 ringside and $15 general admission. I thought that these were pretty good prices, and they're pricing the building to sell, which I think will be telling if it doesn't. I don't know if you saw that report this week on what the prices were. I think tickets went on sale with a pre-sale earlier this week. They go on sale to the general public tomorrow, but it does seem like they're pricing these events to sell, which obviously they should do.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call. Part of me was kind of worried if they were going to try to do something like, you know, $75 front row or something crazy. I mean, I was looking at tickets to a WWE pay-per-view TLC coming up in Minneapolis, and I think the tickets we were looking at were like 70, 80 bucks. So, I mean, yeah. GFW is just, Impact.
Whatever
they're going to do. Yeah, they're not going to do anything like that. So I think it's definitely a good move, because visually you don't want their biggest show of the year there, essentially WrestleMania, to look like that. So I also saw that they have like they do have $500 kind of meet and greet packages.
Yeah, they also had packages if you went to every single show too.
Yeah, and like Rosemary will do face paint for you and a bunch of
random
things. Yeah. So I don't know.
That's a little strange.
I don't know. Such an odd giveaway.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I mean, yeah, I'll be curious to see if we would ever find out how many people actually paid $500 for that. But overall, yeah, $40 seems pretty reasonable to be front row for something that will at least be televised on pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, I paid double that for tickets to the Raw before SummerSlam in Boston. We were on the floor. Uh-huh. We were up by the aisleway on the floor. But I want to say that those tickets were $75 a piece or $80 a piece. Uh-huh. So, I mean, that they're definitely pricing it to sell. There's no question about that. And I also think that this could be an interesting experiment because while taping in Orlando saves them money, there's no question about that, they're still renting the soundstage. You know, they're not, you know, Universal isn't giving them the soundstage for free. So I've always sort of thought that doing tapings like this, where even if you're pricing the tickets, you know, at a lower rate, if the tickets don't even make you money, if the tickets just cover the building rent, you're already coming out ahead from what you're doing in Orlando, theoretically, because you're paying for the use of the soundstage and not charging admission to get into those shows. You can't. So if the ticket gate just covers the rent for a building, you would think that that's an improvement over where they are now from an expenditure standpoint. So I think this is an interesting experiment, and if it works, you know, I wonder if they try to do things like this moving forward where, you know, is it on the road? I guess you could say kind of, but I think they would still do the same taping schedule in terms of taping 4 to 5 or even, you know, probably more than that, but more like 6 to 7 weeks of television at a time. But taking it to different places where you could sell admission, at least hopefully break even, and then, you know, it takes some of your cost away. I think they could do that in Canada. I think they could do that in the UK. And then, you know, certain North American markets or certain U.S. markets, I think you could do it in probably, even if you take a loss on the live event gate, it might still be less of a loss than what you're taking on renting the Universal soundstage and not getting any income at all from the live gate because you can't charge admission. So that would be – this is an interesting experiment, I think, for the company, because if they are able to do that and even just, you know, lose a little less money or break even, is it something they try to do moving forward? Now, I don't know what the cost savings are to being in Orlando either. I mean, obviously that the sound stages are already – they're already lit. The lights are already hung. The sound wires are already – have already been run. All those cables have been run. So maybe there's, you know, there's no pipe and drape needed because you're in a soundstage. So maybe there's benefits to being in a soundstage that still make it cheaper. But I think this is an interesting experiment coming up to see how they draw and how it affects their bottom line on these shows and whether or not they travel more often or whether they just sort of stick to being in Orlando.
Yeah, I think so too. As long as they're not losing a lot of money, I think it's a really good idea just to get out of the impact zone. I know Wade has talked about this in the past, but you know, a lot of people gave Eric Bischoff kind of a tough time for, say, going to Sturgis and running on a beach because they lost money at those events. But then there's also this intangible of just standing out and doing something different for the long run. And I think that's badly what Impact needs right now, because of course if you tune in and you see them in the Impact Zone, you've seen it 1,000 times, nothing has changed. So getting in front of new people, taking it on the road, as long as it's not embarrassing and as long as they're not losing a ton of money, I think it's a good move for them.
And not only that, I mean, we've talked about in the past about them needing to sort of change the culture of what the show feels like to make it feel less like TNA, because that has a certain stink to it. Well, getting out of the Impact Zone and getting out of Orlando, I think, is a big part of that, you know, getting to some place where things feel a little newer and a little more fresh, because just so much of that building, it doesn't feel any different than what it did 2 years ago. You know, it looks the same. It feels the same. It sounds the same. They need something to make the show feel different than when it was TNA, because TNA just does not have in a lot of endearing qualities. That name, people don't have endearing feelings about TNA. So I think they need to try to get as far away from that as possible. And getting out of Orlando could be a big step in that direction, even if it's on the same. I mean, I'm not saying they got to go live every week. You know, they're gonna they can't. I'm just talking about doing the same taping schedule we have now. Tape 4 or 5 times a year, but do it in 4 or 5 different locations. That also means that they probably don't have to kill themselves finding markets that will work either. You know, it's not like they're going to tape every other week and they need 26 cities that can draw a big enough crowd for a television taping. You're talking about 5, 6, or 7. I think that's doable. I really do, especially if they're willing to price the events like they're doing in Ottawa, pricing them to sell.
Yeah, I know when the Bischoff and Hogan came in and their big push was to take Impact on the road. It's got to be on the road. It's got to be live and it's got to be in front of these, you know, relatively big crowds. And even though they were drawing 2, 3, 4, 5,000 people, I think at a time, they were losing just a crazy amount of money because they were doing that every other week. The ticket sales just weren't big enough. The talent roster was too expensive. So a very scaled down version of that, that looks good on TV with I'm assuming a much lower, budget for the wrestlers. It's definitely something they should look into as long as it doesn't lose them money. Like you said, it's like, it doesn't matter if they bring in, John Morrison, Johnny Impact or Alberto El Patron. If the rest of the show looks exactly the same, it's going to be that much harder to bring back lapsed fans, to bring in anybody curious. So, yeah, just some change of environment is definitely something they should be looking for.
All right, let's go to our first break. When we come back, we'll talk to you guys at 515-605-9345. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast, 515-605-9345 is the number to join Andrew and I talking Impact Wrestling with you. I just finally got used to saying GFW, and now I got to take it away.
I know.
I wish they would figure out a name. The wrestling company to be named later. I mean, come on. Speaking of which, I mean,
yes.
James Storm, obviously, this was taped before everything happened, but starting a GFW chant when they've scrubbed as GFW as much as they can from the show, I thought was hilarious. You know, they took GFW off the Impact logo, it looked like, tonight. There's no GFW to be found anywhere. And then you've got James Storm starting a GFW chant. Was priceless.
I would like, how did they not edit that one out of the show? I mean, it would have been like a weird cut, but I think I probably would have gone for it. It was probably only the second most embarrassing thing James Storm did, but I'm sure
we'll talk about that later. Let's get to the phone calls at 515-605-9345. Up first, Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, hello.
How are you, Mike and Andrew?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
That's great. As usual, Impact does its best to confound and confuse us beyond our wildest imagination.
They are
very consistent with that.
Yeah, they are very good at that.
So, my first question for this week actually concerns the second part of the AMP Anthology special, which aired 2 weeks ago. If either one of you happened to catch this, which I did, being the extreme artist professional caller of the group here. you will notice that Cyrus Fees and Chael Sonnen made their best attempt to announce each currently contracted WWE wrestler as working there, but they also unintentionally made it seem as though each person was working for Global Force as well, I guess because they had to in some way. If you heard the commentary, how were Cyrus and Chael allowed to do this without Jeff Jarrett and Global Force Management being sued? Question number one.
I actually did. I didn't see the first part, but I did watch the second part of the Amped Anthology. You know, I noticed that a little bit too, and I thought it was interesting as well. I don't know the legalities on how they would be able to do that, because I did notice what you were talking about. And it seemed to me that maybe – I know some of this some of the commentary, I don't know if all of it was, but some of it was definitely redubbed. And I just don't know the legal nature of how these things come together. You know, are they able to sort of reference them as being currently employed because they're on a show that they're currently commentating about? You know, I did think it was odd. You know, it made me, honestly, there was a couple of times where I rewound what I was watching just to make sure that I heard something right, because just it sounded clunky, you know. And yeah, I don't know legally how they're allowed to do that when clearly some of those guys aren't working for them. And as I'm sure Andrew and I will talk about later on the VIP after show, WWE seems to like to serve cease and desist letters to people that they think are infringing upon their their intellectual properties. But yeah, I don't know legally how or if they're allowed to do that. I mean, it could be something where they just figured, hey, you know what? Not a lot of people are going to watch this anyway. We'll just sort of take our chances with it. But yeah, it definitely stood out. Andrew, did you happen to catch that at all?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I wish I had an answer for that, for how that's possible. Very strange approach by them to go with that. I mean, you know, they're pretty open about, you know, their other stars leaving them in the past, like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, when they do kind of highlight package videos. But yeah, they went the extra mile and made it seem like they were in the company. But anybody who actually watches the show knows that isn't true.
Yeah, exactly.
So it just seemed, like a really kind of shady tactic, marketing tactic. And I wonder who approved that. I mean, I assume it must go all the way up, but I don't know why that is the route they would take. It just doesn't come across well, I think.
I mean, it struck me as either, because like you said, anyone watching the Amped Anthology knows who and who isn't on the Impact roster. So mm-hmm. I almost, the first couple of times I heard little instances of stuff like that, I almost wondered, is this just, you know, Chael Sonnen and maybe not realizing that, you know, these guys aren't on the roster anymore. You know, if he's not following the product, maybe he doesn't know. But, you know, if some of this stuff was redubbed, and I know that it was, you would think at some point Jeff Jarrett or Dutch Mantel, whoever's overseeing this, would be like, hey, Chael, you know, so-and-so's not here anymore. Or something like that. Because there was so much of it, and it happened more than once, that I think that they're was probably direction for them to do it like that.
To answer that, Mike, I believe I heard Jeff Jarrett say on a conference call promoting the first anthology special that all of the commentary had to be redubbed.
Okay. I knew at least some of it was because I remember seeing a picture that they had flown Chael into Nashville for something. So I didn't know if it was just, you know, part of it or all of it, but there you go. Yeah. So, I mean, clearly I would think then at that point they were directed to do it that way. I just have no idea why, because like you said, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No.
My second question concerns tonight's tag title match. Is it me, or did the breakdown facebuster finish by OVE seem extremely anticlimactic, and does that spell potential doom for OVE's chances of continuing to get over while they are tag team champions?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good match, but I feel like you that the finish was a little anticlimactic, and you know, sometimes the finishes coming out of nowhere sometimes aren't necessarily a bad thing, but this one just felt like it was too far out of left field, and I'm not sure, you know, the crowd didn't seem to be behind it. It just felt very anticlimactic. I don't know, Andrew, what were your thoughts there? Because I do sort of feel like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that. I thought the match was pretty good, like you said, but there just wasn't the storyline support for this. LAX is doing, I thought, pretty well with the tag team titles. And OVE, I mean, I don't think they're quite clicking yet. I mean, we talked before, they had a few squash matches, and then they moved into this feud, basically just because there's no other tag teams to feud with. And then last week they had that silly moment where they walked right by Homicide. And didn't realize he was right there. The whole build to it has been bad. And fans, I don't think we're into it. And where do you go from here? They've already held the titles. I think just putting them in a longer chase and having them go over some established tag teams and actually showing us more character development would have helped them a lot more than just putting the titles on them this soon.
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that's hurting them too, that wasn't necessarily hurting LAX's champions, but there's just, you said it, there's nobody else in the tag team division right now. I mean, think about it. There is literally no other tag team that they're featuring at all. They have some on the roster, but no one, there's no other tag team matches on the show with regular tag teams. I mean, there's tag team matches featuring singles guys together, but Reno Scum's on the shelf. We haven't seen the Veterans of War in forever. Garza Kid apparently is no longer with, Garza Jr. is apparently no longer with Laredo Kid. I mean, there's no other tag teams on the show, which I think hurts a little bit too. Cause you're the champions of this division, but it seems like right now this division is only two teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my final question for this week concerns the Global Wrestling /WWE Network. With Evolve and Flow Slam currently involved in a major lawsuit over Evolve's alleged fudging of numbers and Flow Slam's gross under promotion of Evolve content, do you think Evolve potentially sending their content over to WWE Network could act as a catalyst for other promotions such as Ring of Honor or potentially Impact if they continue to go down the strange path that they're going down to be used by Vince McMahon for the WWE Network at some point.
I think that's what
part of a higher priced tier of network program.
Yeah, I think that's what they're trying to explore right now, WWE. They're sending out surveys, I mean, multiple surveys at this point. And, you know, it makes sense. I saw Sean Radican from PWTorch.com. If you haven't checked out his reporting on the Evolve situation with Flow Slam, I mean, he's covered it better than anybody on what's going on there. And I think I read something tonight. It was during Impact, during the commercial break, so I was skimming through it. But Gabe Sapolsky is looking at other ways for them to stream their shows. I mean, WWE Network just makes sense for them, especially with an ongoing relationship already established. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens here because, you know, I don't know who would be a good fit for WWE Network and who wouldn't. You know, I don't know what WWE is going to be willing to pay these companies to stream their shows. I would imagine that's how it would have to work. It'd have to be some sort of licensing agreement. As part of a higher tier where maybe they take the revenue from those higher tiers and split it up somehow. I mean, I really don't know the business model and how they would do it, but it seems to be something that they're exploring that they've been thinking about for a while, and Evolve, I think, absolutely makes sense. And, you know, if they were to acquire Impact, I mean, maybe, because, you know, Ed Nordholm says they're not for sale, but I think, you know, for the right number, anything's for sale. I don't know if WWE would necessarily buy the company and stream it on the network. I don't think that would make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, maybe it's something that GFW, if given the opportunity, looks at WWE Network as a viable option from a streaming standpoint. Because we really, outside of the Global Wrestling Network being announced the week that, you know, Jeff Jarrett left the company and there was all this turmoil, there hasn't really been any mention of it at all since then. So we don't really know what's going on with that. But, Andrew, what are your thoughts there on that whole situation with Evolve and streaming and where they're going to go and what it could mean for companies like Impact?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that Global Force could look into. I imagine Ed Nordholm and Jeff Jarrett, if he ever comes back to the company, would want to try to make their own streaming service work. You know, cause you know, you sell a subscription to that, you're going to get $8 a month from a fan. WWE is not going to give you anywhere near close for that. If they bring you on board, however, they will sell a lot more extra subscriptions based on GFW coming in than GFW could do on its own, I would assume. But yeah, I think, I mean, especially if Jeff Jarrett comes back in the fold, that would be a huge blow to his ego to kind of, in a way, sell out to WWE when for 15 years he probably saw himself as their biggest competitor. So I would think they would probably try to avoid that at all costs. But, you know, I mean, if they keep losing fans and nobody else shows any interest in buying the product eventually, it's certainly something that could happen in the future.
Yeah, the only way I really see it is if WWE were to acquire the company, but you know, I don't see WWE acquiring the company and then continuing to produce shows. I just don't think that Impact is a commodity and a brand that people care enough about that they would say, okay, well, we're going to keep producing the show and airing it on our network. I think they'd air the library, but you know, they'd take some of the wrestlers that they want that are under contract. But I don't see a situation where they would acquire the company and then continue to air the show, even exclusively on WWE Network. I just don't think they're going to want to continue to produce original programming. I don't think there's enough of a viewership there for them to think that would be worth it.
I don't necessarily think so either, but if there's anything all of us have learned throughout our time in the business at any level, it's you can't say something will never happen because just when we get ready to say that, it does.
That is true. That is definitely true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure.
All right, Colin. Well, hey, we appreciate the phone call as always.
You're welcome, Mike. We'll talk next week.
All right.
Yes.
Have a good one.
We will.
You guys too.
All right. That is Kylan in New Jersey. He drops off. That opens up a spot for you at 515-605-9345. We get some more callers to get to. We'll get to them in just a second, right after a quick break here on the PW Torch Livecast.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you after Impact Wrestling here on a Thursday night. Let's go back to the phone calls at 515-605-9345. And again, you can also email the show at impactlivecast@gmail.com. But next up, it's Cody in Louisiana. Cody, hello this evening.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, pretty good. What's on your mind?
I got to tell you, it's really good to start off listening to the show and not have any news about GFW outside of the ring. It's really nice to be able to actually talk about the show itself.
It feels like a rare week in that regard.
It does. Yeah,
absolutely. I'm not complaining, but I think it's a good thing. I had a few things I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to y'all about the women's match, the tag team match, and the main event. So I want to start off with the women's match. It kind of seems to me that Sienna, the women's champion, is kind of left out of the shuffle. She did get the win tonight. A couple of things I noted about the match was number one, Taya Valkyrie was much shorter on TV than I thought she would be, judging by her vignettes leading up to her debut. Also, I don't know if y'all noticed this, but Taya Valkyrie almost cost her team the match. There was a point in the match where Allie had a submission hold on Taryn Terrell, and Taya Valkyrie was on the top rope, and all she had to do was turn her head ever so slightly, and she could see it and break up the submission, but she didn't. But that's just me being picky. But the main question is, the focus on the women's division it seems to mostly be on the feud between Taryn Terrell and Gail Kim and then Taya Valkyrie. So do you guys think that Sienna's being left out to dry?
Yeah, I do a little bit. I don't know about you, Andrew, but it does sort of feel that way. I think between, like Cody was saying, between Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell having a feud and Taya Valkyrie, I thought, you know, they should have come in and kept her separate from everything else going on in the division just to keep her a little special too. I was making the point in my Impact report on pwtorch.com tonight that I think they're going to ultimately lead to a Gail Kim Taya Valkyrie match at Bound for Glory for the Knockouts title. And then I looked at it and I go, wait a minute, you know, neither of these people even have the belt. They'd have to get the belt on one of them at some point in order to do that because Sienna's the champion. What are your thoughts there, Andrew? Do you feel like that they're sort of leaving Sienna out here even though she is the champion at this point?
Yes, I do. And I mean, I guess I hadn't even thought of it that way. Cause I know last week on the show, I was pushing for a Taya Valkyrie Rosemary match at Bound for Glory. And yeah, it didn't even really stand out to me that Sienna had the belt. I'm not a big fan of what they're doing at the moment with everyone. I kind of complained last week as well that Taya, you know, was already taking too many bumps. And there's no kind of clear direction for where they're headed for this. And I know they still have a few weeks out, but again, this is their version of WrestleMania. And if like Gail Kim is going to have her big match against Sienna, they should be well into that build by now. So it seems no matter what it is, it's going to be piled together in the next few weeks. And it doesn't seem like it's probably going to be a big one-on-one contest. It'll probably be some sort of maybe six-woman match or two different matches going on, but yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I had barely thought of Sienna these past few weeks and that's on just because she hasn't done much of note.
Yeah, I think the one that's really getting lost too is Taya Valkyrie, because she's come in and you would think that they could build her in a way that it would make her feel like a bigger deal. And it's not that they haven't, you know, it's not that they haven't booked her to feel like she's a big part of the division. She feels like a big deal. She feels like a star within the context of the division. But I think they've rushed her into this, you know, like tonight she's in a six-woman tag and just kind of gets lost, you know, with so much other stuff going on. I think keeping her separate, keeping her out of that for a while, keeping her separate just builds her up, makes her feel a little more special. And maybe you go with just a regular tag match, Sienna and Taryn Terrell versus Gail and Allie. Even keep Rosemary out of there, I would think, for now. But yeah, it's. I think there's a couple of people getting lost. Sienna's definitely one of them. I think Taya Valkyrie is going to end up getting lost as well, just because, you know, this. It seems like they're just throwing them all together instead of finding a way to maybe, you know, do two concurrent storylines with two of them, as opposed to just a hodgepodge of throwing them all together in one match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree too. It just seems very muddled and not very clear what they're doing with the women's division at this point. But anyways, going on to the tag team match, I'm kind of with Kylan, and I'm feeling a little trepidation on having OVE as the tag team champions. Well, first off, because LAX is, you know, the hottest thing going in TNA right, or GFW right now, and you know, I would have said just keep the titles on them until Bound for Glory, and then maybe have them drop it. But another thing too is, you know, with all the hype that OVE has had, they're still fairly new to GFW. As Stephen A. Smith on First Take would say, you know, wet behind the ears, Brett smelling like Similac. they're still fresh, you know, bright eyed and bushy tailed, fresh face in GFW, and you know, I thought it was. And I also agree with y'all about the finish. The finish was a little clunky and also very anticlimactic, and the announcing really didn't help with that much. But what do you guys see this whole feud with LAX and OVE going like? Because obviously they're going to have a rematch down the line.
Yeah, I don't see any other way possible other than they have a rematch at Bound for Glory. I mean, I just don't know who else, you know, what other tag team match you're going to do. you know, we were talking mm-hmm. about earlier, there's really no other tag teams in the company right now. So OVE and LAX, I think, is your tag match for Bound for Glory. I think that's where the rematch happens. And although I agree that I think OVE's been rushed into this spot, I think in reality they've been rushed into this spot because there just aren't any other tag teams. You know, it's not like they have anybody else that they could build themselves up against. There's nobody else that could really challenge LAX. They're just sort of stuck where there's no other teams in the company. These are the two teams they have, which doesn't make the belts feel very important. But, you know, I think that's why they are where they are at this point. Andrew, do you agree? Do you think they're going to end up with a rematch here at some point? And it kind of feels like it's going to be Bound for Glory?
Yes, completely agree. They'll probably just have to do some sort of street fight or something. Because, there's nowhere else to go. I mean, I don't think Veterans of War versus OVE is going to go down to Bound for Glory. They've done it to themselves, and it's unfortunate because I agree LAX was doing well with the titles. I would have rather have seen them hold on to it for a year, and then whoever beats them is made. OVE is not going to get much out of it, just again because they've been booked so poorly. I mean, they kind of came in as heels, it appeared, and with those vignettes and beat those jobbers. And now they have the champs. They're the champs. So, it's unfortunate because I'm assuming also, as we talked before, Eli Drake and Johnny Impact are probably going to have a rematch at Bound for Glory. So that's two title matches that are just straight up rematches, but now you have to pay to watch them.
And kind of like with Taya too. I mean, it feels like they've been rushed. You know, it just, there's been no explanation on who they are. Like, what is Ohio versus everything? What does that even mean? you know, they've never explained anything. They've never explained who they are or what they're about or why is Ohio versus everything. I mean, is it just because they're from Ohio? What does that even mean? What is that? You know, they've never really explained to us who these guys are other than they're brothers and they're a tag team. And they're pretty good at double team moves. I mean, that's literally all that's been told to us about these two. Failed in that regard.
I can't even tell you which one is which right now.
Oh, I can't either. Yeah.
I don't know about you.
No, I can't. Okay. I know one's
good,
Dave.
Good. It's not just me.
No, I know one's Dave and one's Jake. But other than that, you know, I have to listen to Jeremy Borash or Josh Matthews tell me who's who when, you know, when I'm trying to do my report, because I don't know. You know, I couldn't tell them apart. And again, I think that goes back to they haven't done a very good job character building and giving us a backstory and letting us know who these guys are.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
It's a shame too, because you know, I was kind of interested in them as a tag team. I just, you know, I agree with you guys. They're just rushed. They've just been rushed. And I also agree that we don't know much about what OVE actually really means. And it's funny that y'all mentioned that too, because when you think of Ohio versus everything, that sounds more like a heelish kind of name.
Yeah.
And yet they're being pushed as baby faces.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And like Andrew said, their vignettes look like they were heels too.
Exactly. And that's why that's why I agree with you guys. We need to have more information about them. And, you know, you mentioned a good point too, that there's not enough tag teams. To your point, like, is that one guy from Reno Scum still hurt? And whatever happened to the Veterans of War?
The Veterans of War disappeared. They've vanished off the face of the earth. Reno Scum, I am drawing a blank on which one of them was injured. But I did read recently that I think they should be back around Bound for Glory. So I would imagine if that's true, that they could either return at the pay-per-view, or maybe more than likely, I would say, if they go with the rematch at the pay-per-view, they would probably return with the Impact tapings that are coming up after the pay-per-view. But that might at least add some sort of life back into the division. And then, you know, outside of that, you'd think they could go to Pro Wrestling NOAH, go to AAA, bring in a tag team from there, sort of like what they did with Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid. At least get somebody in there, you know, to make it feel like they've got some depth in that division.
The crazy thing too about that is, especially right when they first got to Impact, I think a match that everybody kind of wanted to see was Reno Scum versus LAX. So even if you had LAX retain the titles tonight, you could have had a really big tag team match between LAX and Reno Scum.
Yeah, that would have worked for me. I mean, like Andrew was said, it gets you away from some of these rematches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right, I just also want to talk about the main event real quick. And it just seems like it's an every week thing. Like towards the end of the show, you know, it's supposed to be about, you know, Eli Drake, and it's always about something else. This week it was almost like that, but thankfully, like you said, the last thing we saw on the television was Eli Drake. And I got to tell you something. Like I am really 100% all in on Eli Drake as a champion. I don't know, like I mentioned how much I liked him in the past, but this week, that promo that he did leading up to his match was just fantastic. Y'all were 100% correct, and he was one of the most underrated talents on the roster. And I think to all the people that are all the people that were down on him the past few weeks, I think they really just need to really take a closer look at the gravy train, because I think you can draw a lot with just him being one of the central focuses of the roster. And but that the ending of the match was, I agree with you guys, it was very bizarre. Especially there doesn't seem to be continuity whenever there's a ref bump, especially this week, because the original referee threw out Chris Adonis. And, you know, that referee got knocked out. They tried to get a second referee in, and by the time he got in, Chris Adonis was already at ringside. Why don't you just throw him out? Like, aren't all the referees watching the match? It just seemed crazy. It just seemed like one big crazy cluster. And especially towards the end, where we just have all that chaos. And I also really did like the commentary for that match, especially when, you know, JB and Jeremy Borash clearly define, hey, Eli Drake punched a referee, he should be disqualified. So I think, you know, with all the low points that their announcing has been the past few weeks, I think this is one of those small moral victories that they can take with them.
Yeah, you know, I think they, like Andrew's brought up in the past, I think that Jeremy Borash could still, elicit a little more emotion. But yeah, I thought they told a good story here, and I thought that they did a good job of at least explaining things, and they added to the story that the guys in the ring were trying to tell, which is what your announcers are supposed to do. Andrew, what were your thoughts? I mean, we talked a little bit about the main event earlier, but what about specifically the announcing in the main event and just how it vibed, I guess, with other things we've seen from the announcing lately?
Yeah, I don't know. If maybe it's just me, but I am getting more and more down on Jeremy Borash every single week. And like you said, I thought Matthews was fine, and he pointed out a few good things. What struck me was the post-match stuff. And in my mind, this is where, like, Jim Ross is like, oh, my God, all hell is breaking loose. And, you know, Tony Schiavone even would get really excited when the NWO would come out and show all this outrage. And Jeremy Borash is just, like, fact of life, just matter of fact, whatever's going on in front of him. It's just missing this level of excitement and chaos. I'm super down on him at the moment.
I noticed it more tonight too. I don't know if it's just because we've been talking about it the last couple of weeks, but yeah. I noticed it more tonight than in other weeks where he just seems like he's, you know, even just the way he was saying, like, you know, Eli Drake should have been disqualified. He hit a referee. Like, there's a lack of emotion, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. He should be, you know, it should be like, this is deplorable. I can't believe this is happening. Or I can't believe Chris Masters or Adonis is cheating. What is going on here? And he just, none of that ever happens. I don't know if it doesn't occur to him or he's being coached to not do that. But yeah, he's probably my biggest pet peeve right now in Impact.
And, you know, that's really, it's really one of those things that makes you really appreciate, like, for example, the talent that Byron Saxton has, for example, on commentary. I mean, there are people that are down on his commentary. I actually like Byron Saxton, particularly for that reason, because he does a really good job playing the babyface announcer and pointing out when a heel is cheating and when there's a whole bunch of mess going on. And, you know, again, it's one of those things where, you know, even Don West would be really, really amped up about all the action going around outside the ring, you know, saying it's all a bunch of chaos. But I will say that I'm glad they did mention, especially at the very end, that they're like, I think one of their quotes was, you know, there will be repercussions, especially when they brought out Scott D'Amore and Jim Cornette. But on one other thing I want to mention about the main event, is, and of course, y'all pointed out earlier with Garza Jr. It's like, if y'all want to bring somebody out for, you know, to stand up to like a heavyweight, like the heavyweight champion, like Eli Drake, why not Matt Sydal? And another thing that I mentioned too, they aired an X Division 6-man tag that Matt Sydal was in. Like, it again, this is one of those weeks where we're asking ourselves, where is Dez and Xavier? You could have easily taken Matt Sydal out, replaced him with Dez and Xavier, and then not even have Garza Jr. in the mix, which is the most confusing thing that I'd ever seen.
Well, Xavier did have a cameo tonight.
Did he?
Did you catch him, Mike?
Did he?
I did not catch him.
Yeah, he was in that segment. Yeah, he was in the Scott D'Amore segment. He was just congratulating OBE, I believe.
Oh,
to the side of the screen.
Like, oh, you know what? I think
that was his grand return to the company.
At least we know he's alive.
Oh, wow.
You win Super X Cup and you disappear for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That's frustrating. Good point, though. Yeah.
Yeah, but they need to get him more involvement in the show. Like, you don't just win the World X Cup and then just be like a footnote on a backstage segment. But anyways, I think that's all I wanted to say. Other than, you know, let's go ahead and see. I'm actually good on seeing Grado. I'm actually good on seeing Grado in everyday life situations still wearing his ring attire. But other than that, you guys have a great night.
Yeah,
thanks, too. Cody. You too. Yeah. Yeah, Grado was out. If you missed it, Grado went to dinner with Joseph Park in a nice fancy restaurant and wearing his tights. That was great.
Somehow, yeah, I didn't catch that. Like, I was like, oh man, that skit was dumb. And then I somehow finally registered in my mind that he was a singlet. And I'm like, okay, yeah. That's pretty good.
Well, what made me laugh too is Joseph Park gives Grado his first check for being the first client of Park's athlete division or whatever it's called. And Grado looked at the envelope. He seems a little bewildered by it, like it's lower than he thought. But then, you know, like he was going to put it in his jacket pocket, just stuck it in the shoulder strap of his of his singlet, which I thought was great. All right, we got to go to another break. When we come back, we'll get some more phone calls at 515-605-9345. Andrew and I will have our top three later in the show as well. We got our top three finishers all time in TNA. We'll have that later on. And more of your phone calls at 515-605-9345 right here on the PW Torch Livecast.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast, let's go back to the phones at 515-605-9345. I believe this is a Pennsylvania number. 814, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ah, Maryland. I thought it was a Pennsylvania number. Sorry about that.
Yeah. First question I got for you, since Johnny Impact and Joey Mercury reunited over the weekend, I believe in California with Melina, do you see them possibly reuniting in Global Force, since Johnny Impact has a lot of trouble fending off all these villains like Chris Adonis, and Eli Draken seems to be outnumbered in these matches that he has?
You know, that's a good point. I think it would make sense, and Impact, GFW, hasn't been afraid of trying to get WWE, former WWE talent that have a little bit of a name that maybe won't cost them an arm and a leg. And I think both Melina and Joey Mercury would sort of fit into that category. So, yeah, you know, I could certainly see that happening, especially if they wanted to do something with a group or have him feud with a group. And it seems like Johnny Impact is getting in trouble with groups, whether it's Eli Drake and Chris Adonis or even LAX, who hit the ring tonight. So, Andrew, is that something you think they could do and pursue? I mean, Bound for Glory is only about a month away. So, I mean, now that the reunion has happened, it doesn't seem like it's, you know, out of the realm of possibility that a month from now they work out some sort of deal.
That's interesting. I hadn't actually heard that. Very surprising, because Melina and Johnny Impact dated for years, and now he's engaged to Taya Valkyrie. So, cool that they can work together like that. And I thought Joey Mercury was still in WWE. Is he out?
I believe he was released, yeah.
Oh, man, where have I been?
I think it was low-key. Yeah, no, I could be wrong, though.
Okay. Oh, okay, yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to it. I mean, it might be... I mean, I don't think it's like a long-term solution, but it might be fun for a night to have some sort of reunion like that. And yeah, I've seen pictures of Mercury lately, and he looks like to be in phenomenal shape. So... Yeah, like you said, they like to bring in former WWE people. It would probably get them a little bit of a buzz. Of course, they couldn't go by the M&M name, but people would still remember. So, I think it'd be kind of fun for a little bit, but maybe that's just me being a fan of the team back in the day.
Yeah, it looks like here that Joey Mercury was released back in January. I didn't think it was that long ago. But
oh, wow.
So, yeah, he has not been an agent since then. Anything else on your mind tonight?
My second question is about Josh Matthews. Is he doing like a Brian Ladd psychic gimmick? Because it seems like every time he makes like a real bold prediction that it comes true. Like he said, Eli Drake is going to win the world title, and he said that DC3 was the one world title, and then tonight he said Taya Valkyrie was then to win the title at the end of the year.
Yeah, I caught that too. that is funny how that seems to work out. You know, I can't tell with him if he's trying to be a babyface announcer, is he trying to be a heel announcer, is he trying to be a tweener announcer? He goes back and forth, and I can't figure it out. But yeah, I think it's interesting that he goes off and makes these bold predictions. It's kind of funny. I mean, you sometimes you see people criticize announcers for overshadowing too much or foreshadowing too much. And Josh tends to do it quite often, and quite often is correct. Andrew, any thoughts there?
It's very interesting because I know I read an interview with him lately talking about how, you know, this is basically his life. He's up at 5 every day. He goes to bed like at midnight. So he's very, very heavily involved in the company. So maybe they're, I don't know if he's like accidentally letting these plans slip or he's trying to make it seem like he's the smart announcer who always knows what's going to happen, or if he's, I don't know, trying to play some sort of mind games and sometimes he'll be wrong. But no, he's definitely making these grand predictions, and I'm assuming somebody's going to have to tell him to knock it off eventually to keep coming true.
And my final question is about the Joe Park angle that they're doing. I saw Abyss Russell about a month ago at an indie show. So how often does he go with Grado to these shows to do the storyline and impact that he's ripping Grado off on his royalty checks and like taking all his autograph money?
Yeah, I don't know. I know that I believe last week they showed him doing something with Grado at a show in Cleveland. So I don't know if they just – I would imagine they would just fly him in and have him do stuff like that if it made sense, or if he's nearby. I don't know where he's from, where he lives. But, you know, I don't think that they play it up too much outside of Impact TV. But if they're in the, you know, if they're in the same place, if they're on the same show, then it would certainly make sense to do something, I would imagine.
Yeah, that would be my guess too. I don't think they were probably being offered up as a package together. But yeah, I would guess if they're in the same area, maybe they would just try to shoot some extra stuff for TV.
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely, anytime.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's get to our show rundown, Andrew. We'll run down the parts of the show that we haven't talked about yet. Then we'll get to our top three in just a little bit here on the PW Torch live cast. And they open the show with an X Division title match. This is a segment we haven't talked about yet. But Trevor Lee beats Petey Williams to retain the title in about 9 minutes. I thought this was a pretty good opener, to be honest with you. I thought that the match was good. I thought that the chemistry was there. I thought there was a little bit of a waste with the interference from Caleb Conley, and it resulted in him getting ejected from ringside. But I've always been of the belief that interference should more often than not lead to a finish, and we saw it a lot on this show where there was interference that didn't necessarily lead to a finish, and I think too much of that just hurts the impact that outside interference has in a match. But you know, that little nitpick aside, I thought that this was a pretty good match to open the show, and Trevor Lee and Petey Williams had some chemistry, and I wouldn't mind. I mean, we've talked about how it looks like they're going to go with a couple of different rematches here for Bound for Glory, so I'm not sure you necessarily need to do it then, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Trevor Lee and Petey Williams go at it again at some point.
Yeah, same here. I like the match, but for me, as soon as it was getting good, it ended. I was hoping it was going to be a few minutes longer because they're kind of building these as their versions of pay-per-views. It's still kind of a weird thing that they're doing. So I was just getting into it and it was over. So yeah, I wouldn't mind an extra 5-10 minutes if they go that route. But glad Trevor Lee got the win. It was pretty clean. And so no complaints there. Just I wish we would have got at least like 5 more minutes. And I wish we would have had more mic time from Petey Williams over the past few weeks just to really put over he's back and why he's back. And I think they've kind of dropped the ball on that a bit.
Yeah, I'd agree. You know, overall, I think the match lengths on this show were longer than usual. Like you said, this being a themed episode. This match went 9 minutes. I had the 6-woman tag match at 10 minutes. I had the tag team title match at 13, and I had the world title match at 26. That's with two commercial breaks in that world title match. But But yeah, I know, I agree with you. I think that they could have gone a little bit more. I mean, the X Division title match, for so much that's happening, there's so much action in these matches, to have it be the shortest match in the show felt a little weird. They went to the six-woman tag match after that. We talked a little bit about that earlier, but anything else you want to add on that six-woman tag match where Sienna, Taya Valkyrie, and Taryn Terrell beat Gail Kim, Rosemary, and Allie?
No, just that, yeah, they rushed into this too, and Taya is already feeling just like anybody else when she should feel they should have pushed her like Nia Jax was pushed, I think, yep, for a few months. But yeah, that's probably my biggest takeaway.
Yeah, you know, it does strike me as a pretty big contrast to the tag team division in the sense that there is a lot of depth here. I mean, you look at just Gail Kim, Sienna, Taya Valkyrie, there's Rosemary. There's a lot of depth in that division, and instead of utilizing that depth, just they're throwing them all in one match, which seems like it's kind of a waste. Then they had the Joseph Park vignette. We talked about that. Mackenzie Mitchell, she interviewed Johnny Impact backstage, who said over and over that he was going to bring Eli Drake to Slamtown. I wrote in my Impact report that there is nothing cheesier on television than the term Slamdown, and Impact insists on saying it 2 to 3 times per promo or interview. Does he think that this sounds cool? Am I wrong that I'm going to take him to Slamtown sounds just completely cheesy?
No, it's dumb. I like it in Lucha Underground because he's a cocky heel, but it's one of those lines like that The Rock could make work, but he's The Rock and nobody else is. So yeah,
yeah.
I got to try harder to come up with a better catchphrase.
After that, they went to a James Storm promo. So James Storm comes out and talks about how, you know, we shouldn't talk mean about people from Mexico because we're all human beings. And then goes on to call the guys from AAA chihuahuas, says that, and this is a quote, that El Tejano and Fantasma need to get their Taco Bell ass in the ring. He started the crowd chant of Taco Bell at the AAA Mexican wrestlers, and then said that, you know, he's heard, you know, he respects everybody from Mexico, but there are Mexicans and Mexicants, and said that the AAA guys are Mexicants. So yeah, James Storm, the cowboy, you know, southern hillbilly redneck, whatever his character is supposed to be, and apparently just going right down the racist route as well after saying that we need to treat everybody like human beings. I thought this promo was a disaster. What were your thoughts here?
You know, when he cut off the USA chant, I was like, man, that's really cool of him.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the thing. I forgot about that. Yeah.
This shouldn't just be about, you know, country versus country, race versus race, whatever.
We're all humans.
So yeah, exactly. Yes. So I was like, man, that's awesome. And then, yes, he segued into Taco Bell. I mean, in the crowd bit. I mean, that's probably the low. I can't think of anything else in WWE or Impact that has been worse this year from a crowd chanting standpoint than Taco Bell.
Yeah.
That's pretty horrifying. So, yeah, James Storm overall just lost a lot of goodwill with me tonight on that segment. And it's, yeah, terrible. Terrible from every angle. I mean, like, LAX should have came in and kicked the crap out of him, and they would have been baby faces for it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I thought that the AAA guys came across more like baby faces. Because in the promo at one point, I'm trying to check my notes here and see where it is. James Storm was talking about how the AAA guys have no respect for GFW, because, again, they were using GFW here. Phantasma, when he came out later in the promo, he said that they do respect GFW. They just, in their opinion, AAA is better. And, you know, honestly, like, if not for the 2-on-1 when Tejano and Phantasma were beating up James Storm and then EC3 came in for the save, if not for the 2-on-1, I'd say the AAA guys came across as bigger baby faces than James Storm. You know, the 2-on-1 attacking him, I mean, that clearly was a heelish move, but they didn't say anything that was heelish. I mean, from a promo standpoint, James Storm was a much bigger heel than anybody from AAA.
Yeah, and that Taco Bell thing, that's, to me, one of the worst moments of the year, I would say, in wrestling. And just to kind of add on to that from a storyline perspective, I've now complained, I think, 3 or 4 weeks in a row that Triple H has gotten the crap kicked out of him and chased off, this feud sucks. Like, yeah. There's no heat. They lose every single time. And it's just, it's madness.
And, you know, we talked, I know, I heard Wade talk a lot about a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, when they ran an angle, you know, during the Jinder Mahal celebration about how the crowd for a SmackDown was, you know, pushing some racial overtones, booing cultural dances in the ring during a Jinder Mahal yeah. segment. I mean, this to me just blew that out of the water. I mean, you literally have a guy, a babyface in the ring, starting a Taco Bell chant at Mexican wrestlers. I mean, it's just completely insane. I wrote in my report, and look, maybe James Storm came up with this on his own, but I wrote in my report, I'm not sure who came up with this, but whoever did should be fired. You know, whoever wrote that promo should be fired. Whoever's running creative and came up with that, just completely tone deaf. Completely tone deaf.
Yeah.
You know, especially especially with just the type of character James Storm is too. And I'm not saying that this is the type of guy he is. I don't know James Storm. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, you know, where he aligns himself politically. But you know, you look at the character of James Storm and what he is as a character, a Southern, you know, beer drinking redneck type character. You know, there's a reputation that has been attached to those types of people, and James Storm just fed it into that stereotype big time tonight, which I thought was just insane and completely stupid. And then later, after the break, when they go into Jim Cornette's office to demand a tag team match, what does James Storm do? Does he go in and ask the babyface authority figure, Jim Cornette, for a match? No, he grabs him by his jacket and practically throws him across a desk, demanding a match. I mean, James Storm completely looked like a heel tonight.
Yeah, I mean, whoever is in charge of the company at the time who for these tapings, like when James Storm came backstage, they should have said, you just called Mexican wrestlers Taco Bell. Like, you are suspended for 6 months or 6 weeks or whatever. Get the hell out of here. Like, that blows my mind that they let that on air. They didn't cut it out. It's just like you can't do that in 2017. It was never a cool thing to do, but it's just beyond tone deaf right now.
Just cheap wrestling stuff. I mean, that's the stuff that makes honestly, promos like that are things that make people who don't watch wrestling just laugh at it and be like, really? Like, you watch this? The people that when you tell somebody you're a wrestling fan and they go like, really? You watch that? Like, why would you waste your time? Those people say things like that because of promos like this.
Yep. I completely agree. Just completely embarrassing.
Okay, then they went to a tag team match after that. We talked about that. OVE wins the tag team titles in 13 minutes. Then it was on to Bobby Lashley. He was shown training at American Top Team in Colorado. And again, you know, I get it. American Top Team, within the context of the television show, they're heel characters. But here's Impact, once again, just taking the opportunity to trash themselves on their own television show. Dan Lambert said he came out and said it was nice that Impact sent cameras to say goodbye to Bobby Lashley, which again, you know, hey, that part of it was fine with. He's a heel. Lambert said that he makes champions. He called Impact a circus. He told the camera to go back to that circus and then said that Lashley is exclusively to MMA. He'll go to the top. Lambert shoved the cameraman at one point, told him to go back to the circus because the big boys have work to do. Okay. Yeah, I whatever. I mean, you want to trash yourself on your own show, have fun with it, I guess, but I just don't see what this accomplishes. I mean, clearly Lashley's still under contract. Clearly he's not exclusive to MMA. Clearly he's coming back for a wrestling match at some point. So this whole angle is just stupid to me.
That's a great word to sum it up. I don't mind the idea of like a stable of MMA guys coming in and Bobby Lashley's their leader and they just beat the crap out of a bunch of people. And Dan Lambert, you know, he seems to get wrestling in a way, and he does, promo. You know,
he's done well in his role. Like, that's not to knock Dan Lambert. I think as a heel, like, he's done a good job.
Yeah, like, definitely there's something there, but they have chosen one of the most boring, drawn out angles to go about this. This has been going on what feels like months. Just get to it, whatever it is. I'm sure some sort of match, but they could have got there so long ago and done so many more interesting things than MMA versus wrestling versus a second-rate wrestling promotion. It's just it's not good.
And I think, too, you know, this is something where anybody that watches the show – I mean, look, we know what wrestling is, but anybody that watches the show knows that if you're still watching this guy train and sending cameras to watch him train, I mean – you could say he's exclusive to MMA, but nobody believes it. So I think that this is something that hurts the angle overall, because it's not something that people can suspend their disbelief in, because people just know that it's not true. So if it was true, I mean, if it was true, we just wouldn't see Bobby Lashley anymore. So I'm not sure that this is something that really is going to draw people in, just because everybody knows that, you know, it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, no, completely agree.
And then they went to the main event after that. We already talked about the main event, but anything else you want to add on that title match where Eli Drake retains over Johnny Impact?
No, I do like the trend that they are giving these main events a lot of time.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, me too.
I bet in Impact's history, I bet they've never given so many 20-minute main events in 1 year. So it's pretty cool of them in this era to do that. One of probably the biggest pluses. And again, yeah, Eli Drake, I thought he just made a big stride tonight into becoming a star if they don't mess it up. Huge if there.
Exactly. All right, one last commercial break. When we come back, we'll hit our top three, then we'll wrap up the show. And for VIP members, Andrew and I will then record our VIP after show, which will be up tomorrow morning for PW Torch VIP members. So we're going to go to our last break. We'll come back with our top three right after this. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast. It's time for our weekly top three segment. This week's top three are top three best finishes in the history of TNA/Impact Wrestling. Andrew, let's start things off with your number three. What did you have as your number three? This is all time, not just today. All time, top three best finishers.
Yes, I love finishing moves, so this is kind of fun. My number three, I think, is pretty obscure because I'm going to guess this guy probably only won 10 singles matches ever, maybe. I'm going to go Douglas Williams Chaos Theory.
Huh, I'm not even sure I remember that.
It basically, he would like grab them around the waist, throw them into the corner, and like hold on for an unreleased German suplex and like bridge them over. Just when it was done correctly and done smoothly, it's just a work of art. He probably busted it out 5 or 6 times, but it did have a name, so he at least used it a few times. Unfortunately, he wasn't treated very seriously in the company. Otherwise, it would probably be a more well-remembered and well-loved move.
I had my number three as a tag team finisher, and it was the DWI from Beer Money. I always thought that move looked cool. I thought it was fairly easy to take. You know, I don't think it was incredibly dangerous, but still looked really cool. It looked the part. And I just, you know, I think part of it, too, is just nostalgia. You know, I'd like that tag team, too, which is certainly going to help when you're trying to determine moves like this. So yeah, no, I've always thought that was cool looking, and I had that as my number three.
I like that move as well. I don't think anybody uses that right now, do they?
Not that I can think of. No, I mean, we've talked about earlier, there's no tag teams in the show.
That's true. Very true. Number two, I'm going to go another one that was not used very much, but it was used basically in really big moments, and that is AJ Styles' Spinal Tap.
Cool. I remember that. That was cool.
Yeah, I remember he once used it to defeat Jeff Jarrett for the world title. He would yeah, barely ever bust out this move. I don't even know what the official scientific name for this move would be, but go check it out, because he did not do it often, only when it counted. But yeah, just off the top rope, some sort of dive, flip, turn in the air, land on his opponent. Of course, sometimes it didn't quite connect right, but another, like the Chaos series, it was a work of art when he hit it, and I thought it was way cooler than the Styles Clash.
Yeah, me too. I agree. I thought that was a really cool move. Definitely cooler than the Styles Clash, and less dangerous, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
My number two was Awesome Kong's Powerbomb. And,
ooh,
I mean,
nice.
It was just a regular powerbomb. I mean, let's be honest. I think sometimes she would use a sit-down powerbomb rather than a regular powerbomb. But it wasn't like it was anything crazy. I think what made the move for me, though, is so often, I mean, Kong was so powerful and strong, and she was doing this move a lot of times to women who were 130 to 150 pounds. So just the impact mm-hmm. that someone so light is taking that move just made so many of them look absolutely vicious. yeah. And I think that was the thing. I mean, you had her the difference in size a lot of times combined with her power and the velocity that someone, you know, much lighter than her would have to be in to take a move like that just made them look so incredibly vicious and the impact just insane. I always liked her power bombs. I thought that some of them were pretty crazy. And I had that as my number two.
That was a sweet move. I kind of missed the days of just somebody doing a power bomb for a finisher.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I know Kevin Owens does the pop up power bomb, but I like the days of like a Kevin Nash or Sid, just these
Sid,
massive.
Yeah. Sid's powerbomb was awesome.
Yeah. Awesome Kong had a great one. I think so. I interviewed ODB, God, probably 4 years ago. And I think she was like, yeah, that move sucked to take.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah, she wasn't like upset about it. She had a laugh about it. But yeah, she that one probably did not feel very good on anyone to take.
I can imagine. What'd you have as your number one?
Number one, if you listen to the show, I've put this move over quite a few times. It's absolutely ridiculous. You could never pull it off in real life. Never try it in an actual fight if this happens. Canadian Destroyer, number one.
We agree. I also had as my number one.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean, I remember just, God, like back in, I don't know, 2005-ish, seeing this move for the first time. It just blew my mind. And I saw it on a VCR, so I rewound it, played the tape again, and probably just watched it half a dozen times. And if I am ever trying to just like send a clip to a friend about who doesn't like wrestling, just to try to show them something cool, and maybe it doesn't make any sense, I'll show them like the Canadian Destroyer, just give them a little YouTube clip of that. It just still brings me such joy to watch.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And in fact, the first time I saw the move, I was just watching it on TV, and I remember, you know, DVR wasn't a thing yet. So there was, and I didn't have, I wasn't recording the show, so there was no way to rewind it and go ahead and take a look at it again. But I remember thinking to myself the first couple of times, like, definitely the first time I saw it, you know, there's no way that that just happened. I mean, I couldn't physically wrap my head around the physics of what I just saw.
Yes. Yeah, it might. This is tough, but it might be my favorite wrestling finisher of all time.
It's up there for me. Yeah, it's absolutely up there for me. I think the move was insane. Or is insane. Yeah. I mean, it's back again. So, and two, I mean, they've talked a little bit about this on the show, too. They've talked about this on Impact, but so many people have gone ahead and copied that, you know? It's just a crazy move. I'm glad it's back. Mm-hmm. I'm glad it's back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and nobody does it quite like Petey that I've seen. Maybe it's just the fondness of it and the novelty, but yeah, he's pretty good at it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. All right, so let's go. I guess I was going to say go on our last break, but let's wrap up the show because it's about that time. As as we're recording, I'm watching. Sorry about that. I'm watching Thursday Night Football on NFL Network on mute as we record this, and it's the Bears and Packers, and somebody on the Packers just got destroyed with a very vicious helmet-to-helmet hit. That was ugly. It looked like his helmet broke. Oh my god, that was nasty. Anyway, so let's back to the show as I get distracted here. I'm like a puppy. You know, have you ever seen the movie Up? That animated movie Up?
Yes.
Yeah, the dog with the squirrel. That's me on an everyday basis. You? Yeah, I squirrel and I get distracted. Anyway, let's wrap up the show. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here and head over to the VIP after show?
I say it every week, check out, Wade just gave a commercial for this, pwpodcast.com. I'm an editor over there. I just brought an assistant editor, Jeff Rush. So we have more content than ever on the website, just these past few days. So, yeah, check back often. There's tons of quick quotes, of course, written podcast recaps of all the biggest shows out there. Jim Ross, Something to Wrestle With, Steve Austin, X-Pac, lots of cool stuff on there. So yeah, check it out. And we are always looking for more contributors to the site to cover a podcast. So if you're looking to get involved in the world of wrestling writing, hit me up, pwpodcasts@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter for the occasional impact related tweet at Andrew Socek, Souck.
I highly recommend pwpodcast.com too. I make it a daily visit because, as you've said, there are literally so many wrestling podcasts and there's only so much time in the day. So it's hard to listen to everything. And it's really awesome to have a place to go to. So the ones that you don't listen to, you still know what happened. You know what was said. You don't miss out on any stories or any news bits coming out of those interviews. So it's pretty cool. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW, and for VIP members at pwtorch.com. Andrew and I are going to record our VIP after show right after this. So if you are a VIP member, you'll be able to hear us talk a couple of topics on our VIP after show. If you're not VIP, I don't know what you're waiting for. It's the best value in wrestling. That's what I always like to say. I don't know what we have had so far in September, but I know in the month of August, we had over 130 VIP exclusive audio shows on PW Torch VIP. So if you like things like the PW Torch livecast, you will love PW Torch VIP. You'll get our VIP after show, Andrew and I. This week we'll talk reaction to No Mercy. We're going to talk the Rock and Roll Express coming into Starrcade. And should WWE use one-time guys like our one-timers is what I call them in the show rundown, like this a little more often? You know, bringing people in for 90 one-night only shots and trying to build up house shows or just other shows like this. We'll also talk the cease and desist that WWE sent to the Young Bucks earlier this week and the Bullet Club invasion of Raw. We'll talk other things too. So that's the VIP after show. For VIP members, you'll hear that coming up right after this. If you're not VIP, you can learn a lot more about VIP from Wade just right now as we wrap up this week's show. So once again, thank you guys for listening to the PW Torch livecast this week. Thank you guys for calling as well. Andrew and I will talk to you next week. And we'll talk to VIP members in just a little bit right here on the VIP After Show.
PW Torch livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday, And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Wayfeller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.